Welcome to another episode of Hustle Hard, the podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Witt, and I believe that success should be earned and not given. And if you do too, but you're currently underachieving personally or professionally, for one reason or another, then the athletes, entertainers, and fitness experts I interview can motivate you today to do more tomorrow, because they've dedicated their lives day after day and year after year to achieving their goals. So be inspired, take their behaviours and apply their principles to improve your life, physically, mentally, at home, or at work. My guest this week remains the longest reigning cruiserweight world champion of all time, despite hanging up his gloves nearly 20 years ago. He never lost his title in the ring and successfully defended it 13 times, another cruiserweight record. No one ever expected him to go and achieve what he did. By 1995, he'd already lost 12 fights, was publicly ridiculed, and at times one of the most unpopular boxers in the UK. He even considered suicide at the height of his struggles, but with dedication, discipline, and a newfound self-belief, he turned things around. He never lost again over the next 10 years and 21 fights. A true inspiration and living proof that anything is possible with hard work. Johnny Nelson, welcome to the show. Appreciate you taking the time.
Nice one, Ashley. I'm looking forward to it.
So I've always thought that elite athletes can provide a solid blueprint for success for anybody, no matter what they're trying to achieve, because of how they have to live their lives, you know, like the sacrifices, the graft, the dedication and the discipline that it takes to become elite in the first place. And this is why I'm so gassed to have you on my first episode, because your story is a serious roller coaster, in it. It's like a fairy tale that you'd expect to see in the cinema, really. And I can't think of anyone, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, who lost that many fights and then went on to break records and be undefeated for as long as you did. It genuinely is unbelievable. But before we get into all that, congratulations are in order, because Johnny Nelson, MBE. How did that feel? And where does that sit with everything you've achieved, not only inside the ring, but out?
It feels amazing, if I'm honest with you. I think the upsetting thing was that Brendan Ingle, my coach, mentor, friend, wasn't there. My mum wasn't there to see this. So apart from that, I think to achieve such an accolade, and it's flattering. It's humbling. Brendan said, look, I think you should go for an MBE when he was alive. And I'm like, nah, Brendan. And he went, why? He said, because, you know, I'm not you, you know. And you know, if they're giving anybody people less than you, I think it devalues it. And they shouldn't be giving it me. And he said, you're an idiot. and then obviously it came about after he passed away. And I said, you know what, it's homage to, in respect to Brendan, and the work he'd done with me. And to me, his legacy carries on. It rolls on, and so absolutely flattered on, and I'll do my best with it. The best I can possibly do, just to say, you know what, I'm one of Brendan Ingle's products.
You've been retired nearly 20 or so years now, and the MBE is well deserved, isn't it? You've become one of our nation's most popular pundits. You've done a lot of charity work. You've spent time in prison helping inmates learn life skills and stuff. So boxing career aside, the MBE genuinely is well deserved. And now you've got your foundation set up. Tell us a little bit about that and what you're trying to achieve.
Foundation is so basically, Brendan was very, very much a community man. And he's very unorthodox about how he went about the things he went about. And so I could never be Brendan. Could I try and emulate something he's done? Well, the basis was to work within the community, help people on your own doorstep, help people achieve things they didn't think were achievable. I was one of his products. So to me, the foundation, the first year is about we're going to try and raise money to help local charities, local schemes for community education, community schooling. I was one of those kids that I liked going to school to knock them out with my mates, but I was stupid, you know. And so my education didn't start till I met Brendan. Some people, they learn differently, not with pen and paper, but visually, speaking to someone, you know, something, get your hands on something. And so community education is just that. It teaches you to do the things, to teach you to live, pay a bill, run a household, be polite, be respectful, and just to do the things that we normally use to live. And so And there are many schemes up and down the country that are for community education. So that's one of them. We've got one in Sheffield that we're aiming to work with. And the other one is the Mama Youth Foundation. The Mama Youth Foundation is for young adults to try and get into media. And I know it sounds a bit hoity-toity, but it actually isn't. And I usually tell when I go to schools, you know, people say, how do you get into TV? You know, they think it's you're just on it, but the Mama Youth Foundation is to teach young adults to be producers, directors, editors, not the ones in front of the camera, the ones that do the real work, the real talent behind. And this scheme, it started off in London, and again they went to Birmingham, went to Manchester. I'm trying to get it into Sheffield, and it's just to help these kids and make them understand, look, this is how you do it, you know, teach the youngsters how to do it, and give them another opportunity, another opportunity to get into it. Yeah. So that's going to be the first two charities we'll probably aim for this side this year. And then next year we might, you know, depending on how it's going, might try and pick another two charities depending on what money the foundation's raising.
Yeah, well, it's a brilliant initiative, mate, and I'm sure it's going to be mega successful, so nice one for that. But let's go back to the beginning then, because genuinely, as I said, it's like a fairy tale, one of the most inspiring sports tales ever. You left school with nothing, grew up in like a poor background, your old man wasn't around, and your boxing career didn't exactly get off to a flyer, did it?
No, I didn't. I didn't. As I say, most people know, boxing was never my first love. Boxing, I only boxed because that's where my friends were. The downside of going to the boxing club was having to box. I went there to knock about with the boys, and that's it. And I followed my bigger brother. I didn't want to fight. Never wanted to fight, but I had to fight. I had to box because I was in the club. So when I lost, I had 13 amateur fights and won 3. I didn't care. You know, I was like, we're lads, you know, and even though I might have been a butt of jokes because I was the one that was always losing, I didn't mean enough to me, where some of the guys would lose an amateur fight, they'd be in tears. They'd be absolutely heartbroken. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Brendan brainwashed me in a positive way to fall in love with boxing. And he did it in such an unorthodox way. And Brendan was forever, day after day after day, telling me about, you know, people like Genghis Khan and Marcus Aurelius and Jack Johnson. And he'd be talking to me about people back in history. And at the time, I'm like, why are you telling me about these people? What about me? But he was basically telling me their story, giving them that human understanding to say, you know, these people are human, you know, so there's no difference between them and you. Then he'd go on to, everything's achievable. You know, if they can do it, there's no reason why you can't do it, because this is what his life was like when he started out. This is what his life was like when he started out. This is what he might have been talented. He might have had nothing. So he wanted me to understand that there's no difference between them and you, apart from the fact that they've achieved something. And so why can't you? So I think that education, it took years for the penny to drop. But when the penny dropped, I got it. I got it.
I think it's interesting that, you know, you said you rocked up there to be with the boys and stuff, and that you didn't really care if you win or lost or anything. But I'm assuming there were still a lot of barriers to you even getting to that gym every day, and challenges during this journey. Were you not getting like grief off some of the other boys and stuff because you just didn't care, or what?
No. I was getting grief. But because I was getting more grief from them because they did care about winning and losing. And I didn't. And so I didn't get it. Even now, I kind of have imposter syndrome. I can remember being sat down with David Hay and Carl Froch, and they were talking about traveling the world and representing their country. And David Hay was talking about when he and, Audley Harrison, they were representing their country. They went out, they were going all over. And I'm sat there, as they're talking, I'm thinking, I had imposter syndrome, thinking, I shouldn't be at this table. These guys have, like, represented their country. These guys have done this, that, and the other. They've done so well. And I just felt like a fraud because I thought I shouldn't be there. But then amateurs and professionals are two different games and completely different games. But then professionals is the mature amateurs. And so I deserve to be there. But when these guys speak, I'm like a fan thinking, oh, my God. And so I now understand that when I was boxing as an amateur when I first started, it meant more to them than it did to me. It meant more to the boys in the gym that were giving me stick for not winning than it did to me. And that's because, you know, it was their life. It was their identity. It's never been my identity. It still isn't my identity. It was just something I did that was part of my life. Yeah. And that's probably why it's been a little easier for me walking away from the sport than it has for others walking away from the sport.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. So you mentioned you only won 3 amateur fights. I think you lost, was it 10 or something? But you've gone on to turn pro anyway, and then you've lost your first 3 pro fights. You've lost another 3 on the spin in 1992. Where's your head at now? Because this is a lot of failing so early on in your pro career, isn't it? And one defeat can ruin a boxer, and you've had multiple right at the start.
Fortunately, I had Brendan. Brendan says you're going to win, lose, and draw, but you're going to learn. And if you listen to me and stick by me, you'll be a world champion. I thought he was mad. Really? He said, you're all going to learn. And if you can accept that, ignore what people are saying, you know, it'll benefit you. I understood it would benefit my life. I understood that even if I didn't do anything in boxing, it made me a better individual in regards to being belief, self-belief, being around others. So I understood that, you know, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to do this. Best thing I did. And he was right. Down to a T, he was right. So that's why I know Brendan Ingle's system worked, because when I went to turn professional, everybody started like, why are you turning professional? You're rubbish. Brendan said, ignore them. You'll be all right. Lost my first one, second one, third one. I thought, I'm going to have to get a job here. And then I started to get part-time jobs to fit around the boxing as well as some elite athlete. I'd understand if I'd had an amazing amateur career, then turned professional. Then I was fitting my lifestyle around. Then I was fitting my lifestyle around the boxing, but I was a useless amateur. Turned professional, I was still fitting my lifestyle around this useless amateur career, and so I'd get part-time jobs so I can still go to the gym. So I'd do a part-time job, a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon, in the evening. So, but I'd be able to fit my training sessions in. So I was still preparing as though I was an elite athlete, even though I wasn't. But it was that leap of faith to say, you know what, I'm going to put the work in. I'm glad I did. I'm glad I did because I know that it rounded me as an individual. And the naysayers, the ones that said you're not going to do anything, you've no chance, they are the same people that tap me on the shoulder and say, oh my God, you're amazing, how do you do that, you're a dog, blah, blah. I'm like thinking, you're the same people that were giving me hassle. You were the same people that were telling me I was rubbish, which, you know, I could easily point the finger and expose them, said he said this, that, and this, but why, what's the point? You know, my success says it all, and I don't mind. I don't mind the criticism because it's about, it taught me not to need validation from anybody.
I mean, all these...
Apart from myself.
All these early setbacks and challenges that you faced, though, back then, and all the grief and everything, all this is character building and laying the foundations mentally for the future, isn't it? Because this is surely, at this time, this is building your mental toughness and resilience and your strength and everything.
Without a doubt. And this is why I said it wasn't what you see. All this true work was happening on the inside. All the true work was in there. All the true work was my relationships with myself and self-belief. And because you get a lot of people talking about mental health these days.
Back then, this would not have been unheard of. Yeah.
There was nothing there at all. Mm. And Brendan's teaching, Brendan's way, the way he helped me believe in myself, the way he backed me, the way he stood alone to help somebody like me, where most people said, get rid of him, Brendan, he's useless, get him out of the gym. Mental health is a buzzword now. Back then, it was like a buzzard word, like, yeah, whatever, get on with it. And Brendan helped me so much, whereas now, as an adult, I know validation, the most important validation is with myself, because why? How would I expect anybody else to validate me, to believe in me, if I didn't believe myself?
That's a good point.
So even if I could, even if I could con people to believe in me, I'm still going to fail, because I know I'm not the person that they think I am. So you've got to start with yourself first, and it might come across as selfish, it might come across as arrogant, but once you've done that and you own who you are, you don't have to brag and boast and push it in people's face. But once you own who you are, that's the beginning. And the penny dropped with me probably late 20s. Late 20s. And then once it dropped, I was a different beast. I was one of those kids that used to cry when an adult spoke to me. You know, I was that guy. I was that guy that, you know, I just, the confidence wise, I was great at causing trouble. I could never back that shit up. I was like, I was that guy. So to me, it was important that I did the right thing and made the right moves. And I do now. I don't regret it one bit. I don't regret any part of it. There was times when I had a bit of a lull in my career, and I thought, I wish I hadn't did something else, you know. But then I look at my career and I think everything that happened for a reason. And even when I boxed the world title the first time and drew, it was a stinky fight. I'm glad I drew, because if I'd have won it at the time in 1990, I was a boy in a man's body that didn't have the confidence that matched his ability. So I'd have probably got turned over in two or three fights after that. Then what would have happened? You know, I'd have been, you know, I wouldn't have ended up being the fighter I ended up being. So yeah, I just think the way things have turned out is the best way.
Well, you mentioned the fighting for you, not winning the world title in 1990 and stuff, and you obviously had several more defeats up until 1995, when you had a record of 25 wins and 12 losses. And you know, they say, don't they, like boxers have a aura of invincibility that goes when they lose for the first time, but you never had that in the first place. And it's worth adding that you did have a few decent wins up until 1995, but you were criticised horrendously. You just mentioned the De Leon fight around that time, wasn't you? And you obviously suffered with depression and were at times one of the most unpopular boxers in Britain. I just want to put this into context for like normal people and stuff. I had an absolute miserable year last year working as a reporter for The Sun. I was going in to work every single day, like what you said a moment ago, with the worst imposter syndrome ever, and worrying that I wasn't good enough, and that everybody else thought that I was rubbish. And they ended up letting me go before Christmas. And this is why I'm back now doing this podcast, and I'm grinding harder than I've ever done before, because I never want to go through anything like that again. And I think there's going to be people who listen who've had their confidence shattered, or they're struggling with something and don't deal very well with failure or thinking of giving up. What was it up until 1995, before things changed, that drove you day in and day out to keep grinding and keep pushing?
The one thing now in hindsight, looking back, I know the only way you're going to get wisdom is through experiences. Experiences, good and bad. You can't get wisdom if you only have good experiences. Because when bad things happen, you're not used to it. You're like, how do I deal with this? So because I started off on the zero with negativity from others around me, you know, not thinking I could do this, I was already used to it being zero. So when I had success, then you have to deal with success. So all of a sudden, I call them ninjas. They come out of the dark and they're there tapping on your shoulder. Well done. Great. And then when the shit times happen, they disappear. And like, where is everybody? So you learned how to deal with success and failure exactly the same. And so you learn from the experiences. You learn from, you know, when things fail, you think, right, I'll do that next time so that doesn't happen again. I'll do that next time so that doesn't happen again. You learn from success, right? I'll handle my success this way so that doesn't happen again. That wasn't right. Don't get suckered into what they say about you, good or bad, because they don't know you. It's what you truly know. So I had to learn on the job. And so I persisted because I came from nothing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a naturally gifted athlete. So I knew I was always learning. I didn't think all of a sudden, because my picture was in the paper or someone knew who I was, I didn't think I was somebody I wasn't. Because I was fortunate enough to start my career that way. Because if I'd have started with everybody on my back and like everybody taking care of me, and bad times happened, I'd think, God, I failed. I started a failure. So tasting success, like, oh, I like the taste of this. Yeah. So if I never failed, I thought, all right, this is my home. you know, and success fed me. So when people saying, you know, and the establishment didn't favour me because my record wasn't blemished, I'd lost, so they didn't respect me. So again, you're fighting with a bit of a chip on your shoulder. You don't think these people are your friends. You don't think these people respect you because you haven't gone through it the traditional way, being a complete winner.
This is what I'm getting at, though. This is, again, developing that mindset and driving you on and making you even more determined, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's validation for you. So once you know you can do something, it doesn't matter what anybody else says. If they say you're good or you're bad, as long as you know you can do it, as long as you tick the boxes, you know, this is how special becomes special, because they do something different than everybody else. And all of a sudden, everybody's looking up thinking, how did you do that? Because they've not followed the crowd. You've got to where you want it to be. You've done it your way. And then you've done it to your understanding. If you can see success, how you want to get there, you're going to get so many people from so many walks of life, your mother, your brother, your sister, your best friend, your wife, your husband, whatever, telling you, oh, you're doing that wrong. You don't want to be doing that. Now, it sounds like they're being negative. They're just talking to you from their viewpoint. They can't see what you see. They don't have your ambition. They don't have your... So it sounds negative. It's negative and cruel when it comes from a stranger. You're rubbish. Why are you doing that? You can't do that. But it comes in all shapes and forms. People knock you back. If you get to the point, and this is what I learned, if you get to the point where you think, right, I'm doing this and I'm going to do it my way, I've had enough people telling me I'm crap, because you start to believe people initially. When they say you're a coward, which you say about me, he's useless, he's a coward, he can't fight. I initially started to believe them, thought, God, I'm a coward. But every time I was in the ring thinking, if you're a coward, why are you here? Why don't you go and do something else? I'm having a self-talk conversation with myself. It wasn't until years later, then eventually I was always sparring partner, I realized I wasn't a coward. I just mistook nerves for fear. So when I was nervous, I thought I was scared. Once I understood the difference between nerves and fear, then that was it. Changed in a heartbeat. And when I've told people this before, I mistook nerves for fear. You know, the messages I get from sportsmen and women saying, you know what, that's me, I get that. Because they are so alike. It's the same feeling, that same nervous feeling, that same, you're like, your nerves are on edge. You think, oh my God, what's going on there? It's just how you deal with it. And there's a difference. And once you can identify the difference between nerves and fear, that's when success will grow. And once I understood the difference between nerves and fear, in any situation, it doesn't have to be, it can be going into work, it can be going into a sport, it can be doing, once you understand, nerves are good. Nerves make you alert like a deer in the woods. Nerves make you think, right, I'm on this. Nerves are good. So once you understand that, then success starts.
You mentioned nerves are good. So what's the fear? What does that do to you then?
Fear makes you not try. Fear makes you not try. Fear makes you not expect it. Expect success. Fear makes you not attempt. That's what fear does. You know, nerves make you fight. Fear makes you fly.
Yeah, it can cripple you, can't it? It can absolutely cripple you.
You think, oh God, I can't do this. I want to shut myself away. I can't do this. That's flight. That's detachment. Whereas nerves, once you... And the amount of self-talk I could do, my line was to myself, I've got to learn to run with fear instead of running from fear. So once you meet fear head on and you run with it, fear is your friend. You want to put yourself in those fearful situations, those nervous situations where you think, shit, because you know, you think, all right, I'm in, come on, let's, you're like a kamikaze, but let's have it. Because you know, you're ready. You know you can do it. But if you try and run with fear and you're scared, you know, every time something happens, you're going to look away, you're going to detach yourself, you're going to think, I can't do this. You're going to think negatively instead of positively. You're going to think retreat instead of advance. And so once you identify the difference between nerves and fear, I can do this. It's like you work for the sun. You know what you can do. You know what you're capable of doing. But your perception of everybody else is what held you back, what crippled you. Now you know what you can do. That's why I didn't want to start doing this. You know you can interview. You know your insight, how you view things. It's probably different than everybody else's, but you still get the job done. And so once you know it, then it's how you harness it. How you deal with it, how you advance it, how you push it forward, how you monetize it, how you make it part of your lifestyle. It's how you deal with it. where's for a while you thought, I can't do this, I should be here. So you detach yourself away from it. So it's not just in sport. It's in professional relationships, it's in personal relationships. If you get the mindset right, everything is possible. Now, I'm quite sure you can go on the internet, you can go everywhere, and you'll get these, you know, you'll get these people saying, you know, this is for mental health. Back then, there was none of that business. There was none of it. You were on your own. You were on your own. I looked up the David Beckham doco, and he was on about when the country turned against him. And I thought,
France
you know
98.
What? And he was, yeah, and he was on his own. And do you not understand? Oh, now people look back and think, oh my God, that was horrendous, horrendous. But you know, in reality, that happened to a lot of us. In reality, that happened to, what about Justin Fashanu? End up killing himself. You understand?
He suffered bad, didn't he, with abuse on the terraces and stuff. Really, really bad.
Yeah, the pressure is ridiculous.
Mm.
But now people are wanting to put an arm around and say, oh, we understand that. We get it now. But at the time, you're on your own. That is the period I was on my own. You'd look and I was walking down streets and people saying, Nelson's a coward. Say, having a conversation in earshot, I could hear him. And all of a sudden you get paranoid because you think everybody's being negative about you. You think, I don't want to be here. You didn't get it. And it was very hard. So that to me, I know now as an adult, I know I don't need, when I do my job and I'm doing a punditry job, I'll talk my truth. And even if it's not the popular line, I'll talk my truth. Because I know for a fact, if you approach me in a year's time and ask me about it, I will still be able to back up what I've said, because I've not said it because everybody else has said it. Because you can always remember the truth, you can't remember a lie. So I'll give my justification to it. You understand? So at the time, people will give you a hard time. And then as time goes on, they'll either forget and think, shit, he said that. He said that was going to happen. Or they'll say, you know what? Well done. You know, stick to your truth, and you can sleep at night.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a good night's sleep is the best, most important thing, because it makes a happy person.
It's 1995 now, and you've never lost again. Over the next 10 years, you had another 21 fights, and you never lost again.
Mm-hmm.
You finally won your first world title in 99 at the third time of asking. Just tell us the things that you did every single day, your routines, the sacrifices, your daily habits, and the life principles that you lived by that made that possible.
Okay, so the discipline is this: you looked at the failures, you're thinking, why have these happened? You've got to be honest with yourself, not too critical, not too blind. You think, right, what have I done wrong there? Mindset, preparation, lifestyle. So I thought, I've got to want it enough. Now I know now from not wanting to box, I'm in a position where I want it enough. I want to be the best in my division. I know I'm capable of doing it, because I'm thinking, a kid that's had 13 amateur fights and won only three. Some of the people I've gotten as a professional represented their country in the amateurs, and I survived with them. I didn't lose to them. Got battered to them. I lost. There's a difference between being beaten and losing. I lost. So I'm thinking, you know what, Johnny? If you do this right, and you want it enough, why are they any different from you? So then my daily routine is, don't cut corners. It doesn't matter what you see, it's what I know. So if I'm doing this, don't cut my corners, because if you're in a fight and times are hard and you picked up the habit of cutting corners, you're going to go down. You think, I expect success. I'm out of the corner. Bam, bam, bam. I'm back on it again. It's a mindset. So if you tick every box in your head, not for someone else to see, train and look what I've done here, just to impress, for you. You've got to really and truly believe in yourself. So you tick every single box for you. I've done that check, done that check, done that check, done that check. Meticulous check, check, check. Once you've done that, you expect success. And if you don't get it the first time, you think, all right, that went wrong there. I'll do it again. Until you get it, expect success. So I expected success, because I'd done the work. I'd lived the life. I had the ups, I had the downs. I know mentally I was strong enough, because I'd been in Shitsville. Nobody thought I was going to do anything. I was a loser, you know. So now I'm thinking, I've earned my stripes. Now I expect success. So therefore, when it came to training and prepping for a fight, I made sure it spilt over into my lifestyle. My lifestyle, such as, I made sure I If I did anything, I did it right. I did it correctly. I didn't cut corners, ate right, slept right, prepped right. So therefore, you're giving yourself no out. There's no trap door. If you want to be lazy or you want to try and get out of it, there's no out. So therefore, the only person you're letting down is you. And I knew I wanted it enough, so I was never going to let myself down. So therefore, I did everything right. So I'd go running 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning, because I thought, my opponent's not up, he'll be in bed. Yeah, my body didn't know it was Christmas or a bank holiday. So I did everything expected. I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to get distracted by what people say I'm supposed to do. So I'd get up in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, go for a run. I'd go to the gym, 7 a.m., train for 2 hours, go back to the gym, 3 a.m., 3:30 p.m., and train until probably 6 o'clock. I did this 5 days a week. On a Saturday, on a Sunday, I do one session. So I did that, 2 sessions, 5 days a week. On a Sunday, I'd do one session. I had Saturdays off. I did it right, ate right, prepped right, did everything right. I expected success. So when I got in the ring and you're looking for a way out, because you're nervous and you want it, you're disciplining yourself, you don't got a way out because I've done it all. So now when I'm in the dressing room, I'm thinking, he's not walked in my shoes. I've been in dirty little rotten bedsits. I've been booed, I've been jeered, I've had stuff thrown at me, people, I've been ridiculed. Nobody's lived that life. So there, and now, John, it's payback. I've done it all, you deserve it. So I taught myself into thinking, I deserve this. I believe it's my right. Wrong or right, that's how I looked at it. It's my right to be here, be successful, because I've done the work. Now, this is a transferable skill. It's not just in sport, it's in anything. If you put the work in and you've ticked every box and you take away every excuse for failure, then expect success. And if you don't get success when you attempt it, try again and try again. I say to people, if you go for an interview, you've all been to you and you've all got the same qualifications, why is an employer going to pick you, him over you, her over you? Why? If you've all got the same qualifications. They're going to pick the one with the character, the one that's going to stand out the most. What stands out for me is I believe in my shit, and I'll keep trying again, and I'll try again. I will get there eventually. Once I was on that run, I said I would never lose again in a boxing ring because I'd gone through the mill. I'd won, lost, drew. I was a sparring partner. I was robbed in fights, and I let myself down. Now I knew what I was capable of doing.
What's harder? Getting to the top or staying there? Because now you're the king of the mountain.
Staying there. So I will tell you now, again, it's a lesson learned. It's not getting to the top. It's staying there. When you're getting to the top, you have a hunter's mentality. You know what you're after. You know why you want to get there. You know what you're chasing down. So it gives you the motivation to get up at stupid o'clock in the morning. It gives you motivation to cut corners, to be disciplined, to isolate yourself. That's your drive. That's your life. That's your being. And so that's your mind. I've got to get for this. You're aiming for something. You're the hunter. You're hungry. When you're not the hunter, because you're at the top, you are now the hunted. So the hunted needs to have the mentality of protecting himself, protecting his stand. So therefore, you still got to get up in the morning, not to because you're chasing something, because you're defending something. You still got to get up in the morning and be vigilant enough to make sure you are in a position to defend your position against anybody that's been watching you. So when you've been chasing the top, there's somebody behind you that's been chasing you because they want to get to the top. So they've probably been preparing for you for years without you even knowing it. So when you're at the top and all of a sudden you've got to defend your title, you've got 6 weeks because all of a sudden you're fighting him. That person you're fighting might have been preparing you for 5 years. They've had a game plan. I'll beat him this way, I'll beat him that way. Because all the time when you're chasing, and you've got to still fight like a hungry man, like a hunter, because you're at the top now and everybody's after you. You're now the new prey. Whereas what motivated you in the first place, you were after prey. Now you are the prey. And so you usually find sportsmen and women, when they get to the top, they usually fail. They usually fall after the first, second or third defense because their motivation, their hunger changes. Their attitude changes because it's harder. And they think, is that it? What else? I'm a celebrity. they'll get in touch with you to the opening of a crisp packet. You know, all of a sudden you're there, you've got the money, you've got the adulation, but the hunger, the race, the drive has gone. You've got to make your drive, your ambition, not to get to the top. Your ambition's got to be to get into space. So when you get to the top, nah, that's not enough for me. I remember when I won the world title, I looked across at my wife and went, buying a house, next shop. I thought, I didn't think, yes, I've done it. I'm like, nah, I'm out of this. And I want more. So when I won the world title, I was still hungry. I still had that chip on my shoulder. And I was glad I had that, because people looking thinking he didn't deserve it, because he's not unbeaten. He's not an outstanding amateur, that he's not expected to win it. So I loved giving myself a chip on the shoulder just to prove to people, oh yeah, call me what you want, I'm still here. 13 world title defences. And to me, it wasn't about setting a record of defences. It was the fact that I knew I was never going to lose again.
And after everything that you'd been through and stuff beforehand, that is unbelievable that you then had that self-belief to go on and do that. And the record still stands today, isn't it? 13 defences?
It still stands. And the reason why I had that self-belief is because I think people can be so cruel and fickle. And I've seen the nasty sides of human nature when I first boxed Carlos De Leon, how they turned on me. And if I was a weaker man, I wouldn't be here. And that's the honest truth. If I was a weaker man, I'd have gone. In reality, it was not fair for me to say if I was a weaker man, I'd have gone. Because I think you've got to be very strong-minded to have the courage to take your own life. So maybe I didn't have the bottle to take my own life. And because you've got to be brave to do that. You've got to be really brave to do that. So I didn't have the bottle to take my own life, but I considered it. I considered it because people can be so cruel and fickle and mean. And you don't understand. There was times when I see stuff in the newspapers and they'd write jokes about me. And now when I see things like that, I think that's somebody's mother, brother, sister, son, daughter you're talking about we're taking the piss out of. You know, it hurts somebody. So when we see something, it's somebody's expense. It's heartbreaking. That used to be me. And so I understood. When you saw stuff like that, you know, to me, it hurt me. It was someone else's entertainment. I understood people can be so cruel, dismissive. And those same people that were cruel and dismissive, I still see them around. I develop amnesia, but I know. I know. So therefore, I just think, I don't have to say, you're this, you're that, you're this. My success says it all. They've got to come to a realization to think, you know what? I got that wrong. I don't even remind them, as long as I know.
You know.
So once I became world champion, all the people that gave me stick, all the people that were supposed to be the smart ones, to say, you can't do this, you can't do that, I don't have to remind them of what they did, because the biggest lesson to be learned for them is to think, you know what? I got that wrong. Maybe I should look at things differently in future and understand. But unfortunately, people are like sheep sometimes, and they follow a crowd when they start to be mean to people. I just found that people can be wicked.
Well, you've obviously proved everybody wrong, all the doubters and everything. So it's, rather than shout about it from the rooftops, I think that speaks volumes of the type of geezer that you are as well, thinking that, no, they know and I know. I've done that. Yeah, and I don't need to big myself
success
up.
Success says it all.
Yeah, exactly. With all the wisdom that you've gained over the years, knowing what you know now, what would you say to yourself if you was going to walk in that boxing gym in Sheffield for the first time again all those years ago? And also for anyone else that's listening who's doubting themselves or going through a rough time, what would your message be to them as well?
Ignore the naysayers. And then people can be cruel and wicked, you know, not realise they're being cruel and wicked. You do you. Enjoy it. You know, if you want it enough, you will succeed. And it might not happen the first time. It might not happen the second time. But you will get it eventually. You've got to weigh up. Would you want to go through the shit to get to the smooth, or do you want it to always be smooth? Because if you start off smooth, when you hit hard times, it's hard to deal with because it's something you're not used to. So I treat success and failure exactly the same. Exactly the same. And if you want it enough, and you see a path to think, I'm going to this, 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 and this, and this, you'll get it. I don't think you'll get it. I know you'll get it. I'm my own example. So I don't, this isn't someone I've read in a book. This, I know it works. I know I could show you how to succeed, but I can't tell you what it is. I can't put it in writing. But all I can say is, you've got to want it enough.
Your story, one of failure, resilience, strength, character, redemption, bouncing back, overcoming the odds through hard work and discipline, like I've just spoken about, and never giving up. And I think if anyone listening can adopt even a few of your principles and character traits, then they can improve their own circumstances, because your story genuinely is so inspiring and it can definitely help a lot of people, as I'm sure it already has done. Why have they not done a film about you yet, in fact? You know, we've had the Ali one and the George Foreman. Surely this must have, like, this is fairy tale shit, as I said at the start. Has that not come up before?
You know, so I did a book, and when I did a book, someone talked about doing something. They might do something down the line. I don't know if it's inspiring or for, but I think, to me, I just think if it inspires one person to actually change their life and their mindset, then my job's done. And Brendan's job's done with me. I'm a product of the gym. I am the gym. That's how I always say, that's what I always say. I'm a product of Brendan Ingle.
Johnny Nelson, thank you.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to like, share, comment and subscribe. Follow Hustle Hard the podcast on Instagram. And if you have any suggestions on how you think I can improve the show or who you think I should be interviewing, then please drop me an email at ash.hustlehard@gmail.com. Nice one.